Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on the podcast this week is my running back partner, Alex Wong. Alex, how are you doing?
How are you, man? It's been a while since we created content together, so really excited about this.
I was going to say that if there's one shortage in the content game, it's podcasts featuring me and you. So I'm happy we're filling that void. Obviously, this doesn't happen a lot on Stephen LeBron Radio, which we could just get that plug right off the top, actually.
No, I really appreciate it. Actually had someone DM me this week, telling me that, they got put on Stephen LeBron Radio because of you. Because you shared it so much. And I replied to them, I am piggybacking Will to extend my career by 15 years. And that's why I'm here. And that's why you sent me an outline of topics. And I spent this afternoon putting 5,000 words into it. So I'm ready, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would really appreciate the level of research. As I told you, this is probably the amount of research I put into like watching Rush Hour for like the 18th time in my life. So my idea is always the same. It's just 10 questions, just a number of 10, really. I don't know. It's just easy to make content around the number of 10. But my idea was sort of just coming up with 10 burning questions for the upcoming, I guess, like playoff seeding games, whatever. Obviously, we're actually weirdly close to it now. There's like two more weeks until games actually get played or scrimmages and stuff. So we're almost there. And yeah, let's start with the first one. I think I might have asked you this. I asked you and Big V this last year before the playoffs. Which player do you trust the most heading into the playoffs? This is burning question number one.
For me, I think I'm going to go with Kyle. Just because, and I know, I think it was Nick Nurse who said it earlier this week that, this is Kyle's team. For me, based on Kyle's performance in the playoffs last season, especially in the biggest moments in the later rounds, and just Kyle running this team and doing all the small things that don't show up in the box score, I 100% fully trust that those things are going to be there in the postseason. And I think maybe the one thing that is concerning with Kyle would be his shooting. Even though I think his shooting woes in the playoffs, he put that narrative to bed away last year. But, it's been overblown since he, famously went back to the court to put up shots after they lost game one to the Miami Heat in the second round. I say Kyle, too, because he was playing heavy minutes this season. And, the pandemic was great for him from that perspective in terms of getting the layoff and getting the rest and not having to worry about Kyle's minutes piling up going into the postseason. So if you were to ask me, I would go with Kyle.
Yeah. And I'm happy you brought that up because I think obviously Raptor fans, by this point, we understand that the Kyle Lowry, shrinks in the playoffs narrative is not true and everything like that. If you look into the numbers, not only is that statement untrue, it's just not statistically accurate. If you go back to the last three playoff runs, Kyle Lowry's true shooting percentage, 2017, 59%, 2018, 66%, and then 58% in 2019, which is just rare. You go look at some of the guards outside of Steph Curry, it's just tough to see a lot of point guards maintain a true shooting percentage. And for context, league average is about 55. For guards like that to sustain a high true shooting percentage is just kind of rare. And Kyle has been really, really good, man. And one thing I thought was interesting with what Nick Nurse brought up this week during our press conference was he kind of mentioned how Kyle was basically playing the best basketball of his career this year, which is not something you think about that often because he's 34 years old and you wouldn't expect that after a championship, after he's accomplished everything he's done. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Do you think Kyle Lowry was playing some of his best basketball or just straight up his best basketball of his career this year?
Yeah, I think so. And remember last year going into the playoffs, I remember it was you who said that it was going to be hard for Kyle to maybe get to 15 or 20 points in a playoff game, right? Like there were serious concerns about him in terms of his ability to still get to the basket and you know, being able to hold up over a long playoff run. And he obviously answered those questions. Kyle probably had one of, if not the best 34-year-old years for a point guard in NBA history. I actually don't think that's wrong.
Yeah, no, it's statistically, like I kept running this query on Basketball Reference because when it's the off season, all you have to do is just speculate and worry about stuff that does not actually matter. But yeah, like I was looking up, you know, sub 6 foot point guards over the age of 33 that were averaging even like 12 points per game. And it returned like a list of like four or five players. There was like the last good Tim Hardaway senior year. There was obviously a lot of John Stockton on the list, but it's just the list wasn't long. There wasn't not a lot of precedent for basically longevity for shorter point guards. But I think the big difference now is, you know, I think training is just better. Like even if you just compare it to the 90s or anything like that, or even the 2000s, training is just much better. Players, I was thinking about this last night while I was listening to your podcast while shooting at a basketball court at like 2 a.m. in the morning.
Did you go 9 for 16 or what's the official stats?
Yo, I've been pretty good, man. I'm shooting a consistent like 55% from the mid-range area, right?
Can you start recording yourself? Like just put the phone like, you know, like by the basket and then you can film yourself? I wouldn't mind the footage, to be honest.
No, I know you wouldn't mind the footage, man. yeah, I'll see what I could do. Maybe I'll borrow a gimbal or something. But yeah, I was thinking about this and I was like, man, like there should be an article done on just like how athletes are extending their careers now. Cause if you just look at like the older guys, like the aging curve just no longer really applies to a lot of modern day athletes. Like LeBron is still performing incredibly. Chris Paul is incredible. Kyle Lowry has been incredible into their mid 30s. You know, you look at like what's happening in tennis, right? How long has it been with you know, Federer and Nadal? Those guys have been really, really, just resilient. And if you look at, I mean, even like Tom Brady or whatever, like it's just all this stuff is not like unprecedented, because I think you've had a lot of great athletes perform late into their careers, but it seems like that is now just expectation. But I think, you know, with Kyle too, it's not only just training is better, but the fact that the 3-point shot for him, I mean, he's shooting a career high 8.3 threes per game. And I think that's just sustained a lot of just like aging, you know what I mean? Like, okay, maybe he can't get to the basket as much anymore, but if he's going to shoot 8 threes a game and hit them, you know, at a pretty elite clip, then yeah, you're probably still going to be pretty damn good. And then the other thing is just, man, he's actually driving to the rim again. Because if you look at his free throw attempts, he's doubled them from last year, right? Last year, he wasn't driving as much and it was concern because the scoring was down. But this year, he's doubled it basically from 3 a game to 5.7 a game. So,
yeah. And I think especially in the regular season this year, they needed him more, right? Like last year, yeah. I think Kyle, you know, he would probably admit that he coasted through part of the regular season and he was really unhappy, obviously, in the first half of the season until I think Masai threatened to trade him to Utah, probably at the trade deadline. And like they sat down and had that talk. And, you know, when everybody was in and out of the lineup this season, you know, when Kyle was playing with those injured lineups, like he really stepped up offensively. And, you know, I think he took it on himself to do that. And like he's, like you mentioned, it's actually really interesting to think about, you know, kind of these guys extending their careers now, because you would think that, you know, this 1 year extension that Kyle signed before the start of the season, that might be the last big contract for him. But if you look at his performance on the court and you ignore the history, you know, of point guards after they turn 35, like, yeah, you know, it's possible Kyle can still play like 3-4 years on a contending team. Now, you know, is he going to take as big of a role, you know, as he has now? You know, probably not. But like you mentioned, the shooting and also just, you know, we've talked about his basketball IQ, you know, over and over again. I feel like those things will translate well, even though, you know, he might kind of physically decline.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it is funny when you think back on it, like, I think the common sentiment was, okay, we give Kyle this big payment so that he'll take a discount down the line. It's like, I don't know, man. He's living up to that contract. It's not like this was not a case of charity or some sort of wink-wink deal. Like, he's maintained it. So you have Kyle as the guy you trust the most heading to the playoffs. For me, Kyle, I had three guys on the list. Kyle was definitely one of them. You know, the other two guys I had on the list were Pascal and Mark. So Pascal, I mean, even though I think there are questions in his game, and, you know, I think he's going to have the by far the hardest role to play, you know, in the upcoming playoffs as the number one guy. I just think that after seeing what he did last year throughout the playoffs, in terms of just like the way teams guarded him, the way he's since taken that information and adjusted it, and the mentality that he had to sort of like, he started out strong in the Orlando series, was averaging like 23 points per game, was doing really well. And then the Philly series, obviously with Embiid guarding him, and you know, that was difficult for him. The Bucks were really, really tough matchup for him as well. He didn't really score as much there. But then he bounced back really strong in the Warriors series. And I just feel like, I don't know, man, with Pascal, it's just it's not gonna be new to him anymore. You know what I mean? Like, they're not gonna spring any new traps on him. Right. Whatever they're gonna do to Pascal, they did it to him last year already. So I think I'm less worried about Pascal in that sense. And I know mentally he's just a tough guy, man. He's going to get through it.
Yeah, you know, I hope that, you know, so much of this regular season too, before the season was suspended, was him getting used to some of that extra attention that, mm-hmm. you know, he was getting from opposing teams. And obviously we saw him struggle at times. But I also wonder too, you know, number one, you know, were we setting expectations too high for Pascal? Because I feel like he exceeded expectations right away. Coming out of the season, right? Like, there were so many questions about him after he signed his extension, after Kawhi left, and he had such a strong start to the season. Like, you are going to struggle, you know, when you go up against Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, or, you know, when you go up against the Bucks, and, you know, you have Giannis and that defense. You know, that's not like a Pascal specific thing. You know, every player is going to go through that. The one thing that I think is that you can feel good about Pascal going into these playoffs is just the fact, like, his learning curve, and he just always figures things out, right? Like, I think so much about at the start of the season. Remember when Nick Nurse was doing his thing of calling out, you know, a different player every day, and he was calling out, he called out Pascal for his foul trouble because he was fouling too much, right? And he told Pascal to knock it off, and Pascal did that. And it's just like every challenge you put in front of Pascal, he kind of just, you know, eventually figures it out. For me, it's about him like finding that fine line between staying aggressive when the shots aren't falling, but also not kind of forcing the issue. I know he's not like an elite level playmaker, but like, I think that's the part he's got to figure out as a number one guy, especially in the playoffs. That was one of the things that we saw DeMar struggle with a lot, right? And for me, it's like, even if Pascal is struggling on the offensive end, he can still be a net positive on the floor, on both ends of the floor, without like scoring 25 points a game, which I don't think DeMar could have ever done, you know, as a number one guy in the playoffs.
If he wasn't scoring, then, you know.
If he wasn't scoring, he was going to flagrant foul Jordan Clarkson. So, like, the thing with me is I do trust Pascal, but I do want to see how he figures that out when the offense isn't really flowing for him, or when the three-point shot isn't falling for him.
Yeah, that's fair. And honestly, if he fails, I think we shouldn't necessarily be surprised by it either, because it's just a much bigger jump. But at the same time, like, you know, I just think, you know, just there not being any more new surprises, I think, is going to be big for him. Right. I think an in-series adjustment for him to take the time to figure it out, you have to rebuild your confidence, everything like that. That's a bigger adjustment than just him. Like, you know, he's seen centers guard him this year. He's seen teams play him different ways this year, double teaming the post and stuff like that. Like, I don't know, man. It's not like, I don't know. There's no Nick Nurse on the other side coaching against Pascal, putting a box on one on Pascal. So I think he's going to be see everything that he's already seen before. And then the third guy I had was just Mark. You know, we could talk about Mark in much more depth later on, but I just think, look, Mark is obviously great on defense, totally dependable on that end. And he's just, if you look at his playoff history, he's been a baller in the playoffs, like, especially with Memphis, a lot of those years, it was Mark carrying the team. And I'm pretty confident in Mark. The second burning question I have then is, who do you trust the least heading into the playoffs? This is burning question number two.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I know you put out some candidates with Fred and Norm. That's a tough one for me. I guess if you were to make me pick, I would say Fred, just because, you know, even though we know what he did, you know, towards the end of that Milwaukee Bucks series, and obviously getting a finals MVP vote from Hubie Brown in the NBA finals, you know, there's still concerns about whether, you know, he does, if size is going to bother him, or if he can go into a shooting slump over a 7-game series. You know, if you were to ask me to pick out of those core guys, who's most likely to go into those slumps, I think I would still pick Fred.
Yeah. You know, I think Fred has shown a lot this year for sure, but it is still a question for me, just because you know, if you look at, okay, so first year as a rookie, didn't really play much in the playoffs. You know, obviously he was like the fourth string point guard. He was not going to play. You know, 2018, so he's a leader of the bench mob, but of course he gets hurt in the last game of the season, game 82, when the Raptors chasing 60 wins. He misses the majority of that Wizards series. And then, you know, it's not totally fair because I'm sure he was not 100%. I'm sure they rushed him back a little bit just so he can be available. But he shot 32% in five games in that playoff run. You know, not great. And then if you look at last year, so obviously you split it in the middle. But the first 15 games of the playoffs, Fred was shooting 25% from the field, man. And of course, he came back strong, really strong, right? Last nine games, he shoots 51%. Averages 15 points per game. He gets the Finals MVP vote because he was legitimately massive in the Raptors winning the championship. But I guess it's not necessarily I don't trust him. It's just sort of like I just want to know where that range is, because that right now there's a lot of variability in terms of just the sample of Fred in the playoffs. And you know, do you think he's made any meaningful changes and adjustments that, you know, might make him more effective against a team like Philly, or I guess he was effective against Milwaukee, but, you know, I guess Orlando and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, we saw him like do well against Philly in the regular season, you know, this year. And, you know, I think it's just a combination of, you know, he added a bit of range to his three-pointer. So, you know, he can kind of shoot from maybe a little bit further out just to create that space. But the thing with Fred is, like, the problem is just always going to go back to the fact that he's not 6'5", right? Like, you see him get to the basket. He's able to get to the basket, but finishing...
Well, he's not even 6'0", man.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, he's like, you know, when he gets to the basket, he's still going to have that problem finishing against guys with size. And I don't really want to make this sound like, you know, I'm actually, you know, pretty high on Fred going to the playoffs. But, like, if you were to make me pick, I mean, he's the most likely guy, I feel like. And, you know, the good thing for the Raptors is they do have the options to, like, not have him in closing lineups if that's an issue, right?
That is true. That is true. But, I mean, you know, with Norman Powell, again, he's had a fantastic season this year. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to hate on either of these guys. I'm a really big fan of both those players. But, you know, if you look at just the playoff history with Norman Powell, he's had just incredible peaks, kind of just like Fred. You know, same deal. He shot 12 or 13 in a series against the Bucks in 2017. You know, he had obviously great moments against the Bucks last year. But if you just look at it on the whole, man, like, it's also not that great. I mean, the shooting percentages aren't as bad. But, yeah, I don't know, man. We haven't necessarily seen, like, sustained success from Norm. And I guess maybe that's not fair because none of these guys have been in this big of a position before. We gotta, like, you know, you can't necessarily expect them to do it when they've never been asked to do it before. But at the same time, you know, Norm has been such a big part of the Raptors offense this year. You know, 16 points per game this year, you know, pretty much 20 points per game consistently for like 2-3 months. It was unbelievable to see. But at the same time, like, are you confident that you can get this type of Norm production in the playoffs? Or is there anything you see that might not necessarily be sustainable or anything like that? Again, if we're just trying to nitpick, because again, you know, we're without basketball and you just fret about basketball.
Yeah, and Asians love to nitpick. So, you know, I think for Norm, I mean, on the positive side, you can say that, like, he did shoot 40% from three last season as well, right? So, you know, the fact that he's shooting around there isn't exactly an outlier. And I think, you know, him just making smarter decisions on the offensive end and just being more aggressive and settling into that role, I think a lot of those things that he did in the last couple months of the season before it was suspended were real permanent changes. But at the same time, when you look at his production, right, like, you talk about the 20 points. I mean, we're talking about, like, James Harden coming off the bench for the Thunder level production. Like, yeah, if you were to, like, do a comp, right? And if you tell me that Norm is going to bring that in the playoffs and you can pencil in 15, 20 points off the bench and he's able to lift some of those second unit lineups when Kyle's on the floor or when Nick has to play two bench guys, then he's, like, probably one of the biggest X factors to me, like, in the whole playoffs, not just for the Raptors, but in the East, because he's just, like, raises their ceiling completely. I guess it's hard to answer that question, like you said, because we've never seen that before from Norm, because he's never been in this big of a role. So I'm really curious to see that, because if he does carry that over, then I think it changes everything for the Raptors.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But again, that's the thing. You kind of need him to carry it over, right? Like, just like you need Fred to carry over his 18 points per game. Like, you need this offense because the Raptors, I mean, we'll talk about the offense in the next question, but it's big. It's big. That's the question. We know the Raptors can defend. We know that. But it's just the scoring part. And again, it's not like we don't trust these guys specifically. I think they've given us lots of reasons to trust them this year, and I totally want to believe them. I'm just saying, like, these are kind of a bit of a wild card kind of situation with both these guys. Speaking of the offense, third burning question. I guess the question is, what stat do you believe in more? The fact that the Raptors are second in clutch offense this year, or that they're 14th in half court offense?
Yeah, this is a tough one. Can we kind of split it in the middle somehow? Because okay. I do think, you know what? I'm going to go with the clutch offense. I just feel like, you know, I know in the regular season, a lot of those clutch stats are still very small sample sizes. But, like, just having Kyle and Mark on the floor as decision makers late in the game, and, you know, Pascal's ability to create one-on-one, and, you know, the Raptors' ability to have five shooters on the floor in closing lineups. And I think that all adds up to why the Raptors were able to be so effective in crunch time. And to be honest, I know we're talking about the playoffs. I'm not even concerned about their half court offense until they run into Milwaukee. If we're talking about the Eastern Conference, you know, I feel like they have enough to kind of figure it out against some of these other teams, whether it's a Boston, Miami, who am I missing? Am I missing anyone? Philadelphia, I guess. But yeah, I'm not really concerned. And I feel like, you know, if you want to believe in the Raptors, like, for the playoffs, and I know we talked about kind of guys we trust the most and things like that, you kind of have to believe in them as a group, though, right? Like, you can't just say that, you know, Pascal is the one that's going to lead them to the finals, or it's just going to be Kyle. It has to be a combination of those top seven guys and whoever else Nick plays in the rotation, right? It's kind of like, what do they say? It's like the whole being greater than the sum of its parts thing. Like, if you want to believe in the Raptors, and if you want to believe in their crunch time offense or half court offense, you have to believe that, you know, the cohesiveness of those five guys that are out there is what's going to make them effective.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think also when you look at, okay, first off, half court offense is only telling some of the story. Obviously, that specifically excludes transition offense, which the Raptors are devastating in transition. They're second in points per play and then first in transition opportunities per game, but essentially they're really good, and obviously a lot of that is just they're great defensively. They cause turnovers, live ball turnovers, and they run the other way or they force misses. And of course, you know, when people say that, it's like, okay, well, in the playoffs everything slows down and stuff like that. It's like, that's true to an extent. It's not like there's no transition offense at all in the playoffs. You know, I would say Chris Middleton trying to put a ball behind his back during the 24-3
You love run. Referencing that play.
And then getting stolen by Fred and Kyle and leading to a Kawhi hammer dunk on Giannis. I feel like that, I mean, you know, that's a transition play right there in a game six setting to advance into the finals. I love that play from Middleton just because, like, bro, you just stick to what you're good at, man. Just, like, just be a skinny Tobias Harris over there. Like, you don't need to put the ball behind your back. Like, it's just...
this is going to be like when Matt Thomas tries to post up Chris Chioza in the first round.
No, I'll take that bet, man. I know he's got a low post game. I know that. But yeah, like, you know, transition is still a thing. Like, last year, the Raptors had 18% of their possessions last year throughout the playoffs were still in transition. So it's not like this is going to disappear. There's still going to be a lot of transition. The Raptors are going to be really good in transition. But I do think there's some issues with the half court offense. You know, I think obviously not having Kyle, not having Pascal, you know, just having sort of missing pieces from a lot of the year does hurt the offense as a whole. But I also do think that, like, the Raptors might not necessarily be built to be a super high efficiency half court offense in the regular season. Because if you look at, like, who the most efficient half court offenses are, it's like Dallas, because it's Luka Doncic has the ball every single play, running pick and roll. And of course, he's fantastic. He's just a, you know, incredible passer, great scorer, great shooter, stuff like that. But, like, you know, that you're more likely to create a half court offense if you're running it through one superstar and he's dominating the ball. But the downside to that is if you can somehow find a defensive scheme to take away that superstar, then all of a sudden the rest of your team might struggle on offense. And I think the Raptors have specifically built a very team-oriented offense that might not necessarily maximize efficiency in the moment, but they're maybe a little bit more impervious to like specifically taking away one guy. Because I think even if a team neutralized Pascal, which will probably be the most devastating, I think the Raptors could still generate enough offense around Pascal to make it work. Whereas if you somehow took Giannis out of the game, if you somehow took Luka Doncic out of the game, that's, you know, Mavs and Bucks are first and second in a, you know, half-court offense. If you took those guys out of the game, that offense is dying. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me trying to defend the team. But
no, I think those are really good points. And the other thing too is, you know, this is going to have to be more like kind of the Spurs, I want to say. Like, you know, when they played against the Miami Heat during those years, you know, Tim Duncan was obviously past his prime, still a really good player. And Kawhi was still just kind of coming in his own, obviously not a number one option type player like he is now, clearly. But, you know, they relied a lot on kind of the five-man unit and the ball movement and finding the best shot. And I feel like that, you know, if you want to feel positive about the Raptors, like you have to think that that's the type of execution, you know, that's going to be positive for them in the playoffs. But, you know, on the other side, you could argue that, you know, not having that clear-cut number one guy, I don't know if like not establishing that hierarchy, especially in crunch time, is going to be a problem. But that just goes back to like issues that we've always talked about. Like, you know, if Mark has the open three, like he has to take that shot, you know, and not make that extra pass and just guys being aggressive. So again, I guess it just goes back to whether you trust that, you know, those five guys on the floor are going to execute. And you know what? I do with this team.
Yep. Also, yeah, clutch offense. I mean, you know, Raptors want a lot more Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam, pick and rolls and stuff like that. I think that's a nice adjustment that, you know, they can make and they have made in the crunch time and stuff like that. And we can definitely see a lot more of that in the playoffs. So, again, you know, I don't think the Raptors are an elite offense as a whole. I don't want to give that impression, but I do think that this idea that they're just like a very average offensive team is kind of misguided in a couple ways. Key question number four. Raptors are only 11-14 versus teams above 500 this year. Is this a concern for you?
Yes, but not as big as I feel like people are making it out to be. You know, when I look at it, I mean, we could go through some of the individual games and point out the injuries. We can also look at, you know, how they beat the Lakers on the road shorthanded and then almost beat the Clippers. I think a night later, you know, without Kyle and Serge. But obviously, you know, they had that stretch in December where they lost to a lot of good teams. You know, when Kawhi came back, you know, they lost to Miami twice this season. I remember that Houston game, you know, when Nick stuck with, what was it? He did like that full court, that half court press on James Harden, and they lost, and then everybody copied Nick. But for me, it's like, I feel like you have to give the Raptors a little bit of credit as the defending champions. And, you know, when a team has gone through and shown that they can beat elite competition in the playoffs, don't we usually give those teams the benefit of the doubt going into the postseason? And we don't really look at those postseason records. And especially because the Raptors are defending champions, and you can point out that Kawhi is not here, Danny Green's not here, but they had a really good regular season. They're still the defending champions. Don't you feel like the Raptors deserve a little bit of that too? In terms of, I feel like when I look at these records, again, you know, 1-2 against Boston. I think what Pascal was hurt on Christmas. 0-2 versus Miami. They had a really terrible shooting game in Miami. I'm not concerned about any of these teams in a 7-game series outside of Milwaukee.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when, you know, when I went back and sort of broke down like the individual matchups and stuff like that in last week's podcast with Brad, who you also had on Stephen LeBron Radio.
Yeah, once again, just copying your career.
I'm just trying to set a record for how many times I can plug your podcast that you can find on iTunes and Spotify. And
other 20 episodes left. So way to join with 4 weeks left, everyone.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff on there, man. It's probably my most listened to podcast, especially during the quarantine. It's probably because it's you've made more episodes of that than I have of, you know, anything really in the last couple of months. But yeah, the funny thing with the 500 record is if you look at last year's Raptors, obviously they won the championship and stuff. They played a lot of 500 teams and above throughout the playoffs. They were only 22-20 last year versus teams above 500. Now, of course, obviously, there's Kawhi last year is a different factor, like completely. What I'm just trying to say is that number specifically isn't a tell-all, isn't just like this you know, it doesn't say the whole story necessarily. Like Milwaukee was 28-13, you know, against above 500 teams last year, and you know, then they got swept. So I think, you know, I think context factors into this. I think you know, it's just, even in some games, like you look at that Miami game, for example, they were competitive in both Miami games. They shot 25% in those two games, including one game where they shot 6 of 42. Like, you know what I mean? So I'm not saying it's like going to be necessarily easy, but I don't think the Raptors are some sort of paper tiger necessarily either. Like, I don't think it's like a 2017-18 situation where they're 60-win team, but, you know, you just don't fully trust the team. Like, I do trust this team. I know they can play defense. I know they can guard against all these teams, kind of as you mentioned. And, yeah, I mean, as Nick Nurse likes to put it, it's not necessarily about, like, how many times you can, you know, it's just – your overall record is above 500 teams. It's like how many, they're going to be a very tough team to beat four times out of seven, because they're versatile, because they, you know, they're resilient, because they're smart, they have good coaching, and they're talented. And so, you know, and of course, even if they lost in the second round, like if they were to face the Celtics in the second round, and God forbid they lose to the Celtics, it's not necessarily a shame in losing to the Celtics, man. The Celtics are a really good team. Like, there's a lot of really good teams in the East, but yeah, I don't know. On the whole, I'm not as concerned about it either. It's not like 1 in 20 or something like that. And you're like, okay, that's clearly something.
No. And I think, you know, like, we're going to break down all this stuff, and I'm sure we'll do a 45-minute episode previewing Raptors Magic in the first round.
I can't
at
wait.
At some point. But like, to me, it's clear with the Raptors, like, there's just, it's Milwaukee and whichever team comes out of the West that they're going to have problems with. And I'm really not concerned about the rest of the competition, to be honest.
Mm. Okay, well, key question number 5. How much does Marc Gasol need to bring to the table?
Yeah, I think this is like the same as last year, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, we kept asking and, you know, wanting Mark to be more aggressive on offense. And, you know,
what, you didn't want him to swing the ball to Jeremy Lin? Come on, man.
Oh, man. Shout out to Jeremy Lin, man.
NBA champion, baby.
We should be next to get sponsored by Tiger Bomb, is all I'm saying. I can't think
keep
of
saying this.
Yeah, don't even, you know, who else deserves it more? People are gonna say Simu Liu. Come on, this guy's got Marvel money. We need Tiger Bomb money.
Yeah, we need Tiger Bomb.
So yeah, I think it just goes back to the same thing as last year, in terms of, you know, is Mark going to shoot those shots that he's gonna get on offense? But I mean, this man is legit in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, he looked fantastic. He finally went on camera today and looked
yeah,
great.
I saw those photos that you guys posted. Imagine if someone told you at the start of this season that Mark was going to look like this in July. And also they were going to be playing basketball in July. But like, yeah, I think it just goes back to the same questions, because you know what Mark's going to bring otherwise, right? You know, on the defensive end and as a facilitator on the offensive end, just one of the smartest guys in the game. I think it just goes back again. You talk about needing to lift those offensive stats. I'm sure we'll talk about OG in a bit, but to me, like, Mark's one of the guys who can kind of lift the Raptors' offense in the playoffs.
Yeah. And, you know, to put this into context of just like how little Mark has shot this year, I prepared a small quiz. it's called over or under, but, so it's over or under. Has this player shot more times per 36 minutes in terms of field goal attempts, more field goal attempts per 36 minutes than Marc Gasol? Okay. So I'll start with you right here. Chris Boucher.
Oh, Chris Boucher thinks he's Kevin Durant. So he's definitely shot more than Marc Gasol.
Definitely. Definitely. He's actually, it's way more. What about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson?
Oh, come on. This got to be a trick question, man. All right, fine. I'm going to say Rondae has higher numbers.
Rondae has shot more per 36 minutes than Marc Gasol. Even though Rondae, you know, shoots the way he does, and that includes layups. Me and Rondae got to get a late night shooting session in at that school I was shooting at. I just want to see something. Stanley Johnson.
Okay.
More or less than Marc Gasol.
Less than Mark.
No.
Okay, first of all, how many shots overall has Stanley Johnson taken this year?
It doesn't matter, but that's why it's per 36.
Did you include all his volunteer trips to 905? There's no way.
If if I include those, then he's definitely above Mark.
What was Stanley Johnson's per 36 field goal attempts?
11.6 field goal per 36 minutes at a 26% field goal percentage. That one was a little tough. O'Shea Brissett.
All right, I guess these guys are all over. O'Shea is over.
Yeah. And then Malcolm Miller.
Malcolm Miller, my guy. Over.
No, that's the only one that's under.
Okay. No, but I
think... Him and Pat McCaw. That's it.
But Marcus you could have stopped at Rondé. Like, you made your point with Rondé. I think that's ridiculous that Rondé's averaging higher field goal attempts per 36 than Mark.
Yeah. Mark's at 8.6 per game per 36 minutes, which is, like, again, like, it's only Pat McCaw below him and Malcolm Miller. Malcolm Miller doesn't play and he can't create his own shot. And Pat McCaw refuses to shoot anything. And so... I just think the point here is just like Mark, it's not even necessarily, you know, all because of the fitness and everything like that, or he's, you know, he's lost a bit of his touch near the paint. He can't post up as much anymore. It's just like, he's just not shooting the ball, period. Right. And it's not like this is some sort of distant, this is like, we got Marcus, you know, we got Pau Gasol or something like that, or he hasn't been good in 5 years. Right. This is, you know, Marc Gasol last year with Memphis before the trade was averaging 16 points per game. Now, whatever, 16 points in Memphis, a lot of people can do that. But still, he need to shoot the ball that much. And he was 17 a game before that. And of course, 19 a game before that as well. So if you just look at Mark this year, man, he's just not shooting the ball. And that's something he talked about. And you know, when he talked to reporters today, he's just sort of like, look, it's been a frustrating season for me just because he knows that he's let the team down and he can provide more. And I don't know, man. It's not even necessarily I want him to see him change his game all that much, but I just do think you need balance from your scoring. Like if you have struggles scoring the ball, if you're going to see teams, you know, doubling Pascal in the post or really stacking the paint on his drives, or, you know, same thing with Kyle and Fred and running them off the 3-point line, forcing them to finish at the rim, you know, same thing with Norm and stuff like that, you know, you're going to need scoring from your center. And of course we know Serge can do it. And we know Serge will do it, but, you know, we also need Mark to bring that aspect as well, because he's going to be the starting center. And yeah, man, I just give me some, like, you know, some mid-range shots from Mark. I know that's not the most effective or most efficient, but, you know, in the playoff setting, I you know, especially if the game gets tight, I do want to see Mark get in the mid-range. I do want to see him, you know, picking and popping, specifically looking for a shot. I want to see him roll hard to the basket, if only so he can get low post position that he can, you know, score in a little hook shot or something, because there's more there. And of course, I also just kind of want to see Mark shoot, like, I don't know, like 7 threes a game. Because
yeah,
he has 7 open threes a game, period.
Oh, for sure. And he's got to be shooting like around 40% from three. Yeah. 40, and like, I don't think he's ever going to get to like 7 or 8 threes a game. But if you can like split the difference and he attempts like 5, basically, like, if Serge is putting up 5 threes a game, Mark should be at least matching that. Yeah, you know, Mark needs to get... Oh, yeah. Mark needs to get a little bit of that confidence from Serge, because Serge never hesitates when he sees a three.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We got to get a Jordy for Mark.
Wow. The obligatory. This is the 45th straight show of any kind we've done where we've referenced Jordy. Shout outs, Jordy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. If you're going to put let's do a little prediction. How many points per game do you think Mark scores in the playoffs this year? Over under 12.5.
Over under 12.5. Wow, that's a great line. I'm going to go under. I'm going to say averages 12 points a game.
Okay. I might have to say over, but I mean, again, I want to say over, but again, I also am recognizing that Marc Gasol has a grand total of 6 games this year where he scored more than 12.5 points.
Yeah, just picturing Mark getting to 15 points sounds like a lot.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, like, you know, last year when the Raptors needed less scoring from Mark last year, but when they needed him to score a little bit, he was able to provide that still. And, you know, obviously there was that 20-point game in game one against the Warriors that, you know, they were really blitzing the perimeter. But, you know, he has 17 points against Milwaukee. That was in game four. You know, he had a really good game there. So the scoring is still possible with Mark. I just think that, like, I don't know. It's not out of the question to ask for 13 points per game for Mark on top of the great defense. It's just, you know, with the reshaped body and everything like that, hopefully that comes. Burning question number 6. What's Terrence Davis's role in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think this will be interesting because we know who the top 7 guys are. Mm-hmm. I want to say Terrence Davis is going to be the 8th guy, but you know, don't you think it's going to end up being Pat McCaw?
Well, I mean, okay, so yes, I think the numbers suggest that Pat will be there. I think Nick values defense more than offense, and I do think McCaw is a better defender than TD is at the moment, him being a rookie and everything like that. But I don't know, man. I also kind of hope for a little bit better. It seems like, you know, I don't know if it was said necessarily super explicitly, but Terrence is sort of like, they're expecting me to become more of a playmaker and you know, just have a bigger role and stuff like that. And so, you know, maybe we got to ask Nick outright about this. But, you know, I could see it, man, especially if you're struggling for offense. You know, TD's a guy who's been confident. I think he's talked a lot about how he wants to earn the trust of his teammates, and I think he feels that way. He feels like he's earned the trust of the coaching staff. And, you know, maybe it's not necessarily the consistent eighth man, because I think the eighth man is going to rotate all the time, depending on the situation. The Raptors have a lot of good options. But, yeah, I mean, would you be surprised if TD came in and gave you, like, there was a random game where he explodes for 17 points off the bench in, like, a key road victory against you know, Golden State, or not Golden State, but like the Boston Celtics? Like, I wouldn't. I think he has that kind of confidence.
You mean like him dunking on Chris Middleton and then looking at the camera and saying, he can't guard me again? I could totally see that happening. No, I think we've seen so much from TD in his rookie season, especially like he was a huge part of a lot of those fourth quarters, you know, when the Raptors pulled out close games. And, you know, it's just a huge part of the offense. He's obviously not lacking in confidence. The question, like you mentioned, is, you know, whether Nick is going to trust him and have a really quick hook on the defensive end, right? Because, you know, I think Nick having those options, I think the eighth man role is going to come down to, I want to say, TD, McCaw, and Rondé, depending on the situation in the series. And I guess to a lesser extent, it'll be Chris Boucher and Matt Thomas, who I think they're going to get some looks, but, you know, probably not as you get deeper into the playoffs. So, no, I wouldn't be surprised. And, I mean, even if he plays the Jody Meeks role and just comes in for, like, those 2 to 3 minute spurts where you just need to, like, buy some minutes for the starters, you know, I think TD is a much better option than what they had last year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. As much as I love, you know, Jeremy Lin, let me, come on, man. It was not there for Jeremy, unfortunately. Unfortunately. Yeah, if you look at sort of the way Nick handled the rotation last year, pretty clear it was a strict eight-man rotation. Obviously, earlier in the Orlando series and maybe at the start of the Philly series, he gave, like, those little Jody Meeks minutes, the little McCaw minutes, a little tiny sprinkling of Jeremy Lin dribbling the basketball off his foot and missing wide-open threes.
Come on, man.
Yo, I mean, that was unfortunate, man. But, you know, he's still a champion and he's still Asian, so that's the most important part. But it was an eight-man rotation, right? And, you know, this year, obviously, they have seven guys so they can trust. So I'm expecting kind of similar results there. And I think for TD, it's really just the main difficulty is just the Raptors have three guards that they really trust that they're going to play heavy minutes to, in Kyle, in Fred, and Norm. And those three guys very well could just take up most of the minutes there. I mean, you know, if you look at sort of the way the Raptors played last year, they had four guards in that sort of shuffling through that rotation, Kyle, Danny Green, Fred, and Norm to a smaller extent. So maybe they will make that space. But I also do think that with the way the Raptors are constructed this year, I might think they're more likely to play bigger than they are to play smaller and to create more minutes for guards, just because you might see more of those Serge and Mark lineups together. You know, and Nick seems to love, you know, teasing that. So, yeah. But we could use some pretty good Terrence Davis moments in the playoffs, because I do think his confidence is really unique for a rookie.
Yeah, you know, I think it'll be super interesting, you know, for him to maybe get some run, especially in the first round, which, you know, projects to be a pretty easy series, I think, for the Raptors, just to get some of that experience. You never know how rookies are going to perform in the playoffs, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it's always a struggle for most rookies. It almost always is, but it's just something about his confidence, man. I don't know. It's just, you know, in some of these bigger games.
But it's something about this whole team, right?
Yeah.
Like I feel like TD, but also kind of just everyone on this team. I feel like their confidence gives the fans a lot of confidence about them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Running question number, what are we on? Seven? Yeah, seven. What do we expect from OG in this year's playoff run?
Yeah, so I have huge expectations for OG, okay. especially after he missed, obviously, the entire playoffs last season, which was really unfortunate. Because I feel like similar to what we talked about with Pascal, that would have been a great learning curve for him, especially playing next to Kawhi. But, I mean, you look at what OG has done on the defensive end. I mean, is it like implausible that he could be like that shutdown perimeter defender? Like if they go up against Boston in the second round, like, you know, I'm not saying he's going to entirely lock down Jason Tatum, but, you know, he could, you know, make him not score 20 points a game. Like he could be a huge X factor, I feel like. And even in the Milwaukee series, right? Like, I don't know if, you know, he's going to be part of the coverage on Giannis or maybe he'll guard Chris Middleton or whoever it might be. I have huge expectations for him, especially because he was so good 2 years ago.
Yeah. And I'm happy you mentioned that because, you know, that was a lot of why OG had so much hype around him. Obviously, he had a nice rookie year in the sense that, you know, the expectation was, okay, maybe not be ready because of his ACL injury in college. That's why he dropped in the draft. And, you know, maybe he was going to be slow to recover. But instead, he does start the season. He takes over the starting spot from Norm, who was just wildly inconsistent at that point, and takes it and runs with it. He has a great game guarding James Harden. And, you know, but, you know, he was still a guy who was giving you like 5-6 points per game. He just wasn't really that much of a factor at all offensively and did pretty well defensively, but he was still a rookie. But the most eye-opening part is, you know, he did go into that playoffs and he was pretty good. I mean, he had that, I mean, look, all people ever remember is the fact that LeBron made that game winner and OG's the guy guarding him. But at the same time, OG in that game was also the guy who hit the three to tie the game to force LeBron to even have to hit that in the first place. And he had 18 in that game. OG, you know, he showed a lot in that first playoff run. Of course, last year he didn't play. So I just think, you know, with OG, like he's just going to be so important because pretty much every single series the Raptors play, you're going to need like a really good series from OG. Not just defensively, but offensively as well. Most importantly, defensively. You know, if in some sort of weird situation the Raptors slip into like, you know, the third seed and they got to play like, you know, like an Indiana or, you know, like a Philly in the first round, you're going to need OG. You're going to need OG to guard Ben Simmons. He's been a big part of that coverage. You're going to need OG to cover Victor Oladipo or whoever, you know, I guess the Pacers don't necessarily have a big wing. But second round, obviously, as you mentioned, you know, Tatum, obviously Giannis. And of course, if the Raptors get to the finals, whoever's coming out of that, you know, situation, whether it's Kawhi or LeBron, like it's OG again. So like he has a really, really big role to play, I think. And I don't know. It's interesting because it's you can almost see what you want from OG because he will show enough flashes where you're like, man, there's a lot here. But then he'll also disappear for a while, and you're just like, yeah, okay, he can defend, but he's kind of nothing really important on offense. And you know, and I don't know, it's a good showcase for him to showcase, you know, and basically just put himself in that category of just up and coming wing players, because you know you got a guy like Jonathan Isaac who gets a lot of hype and praise, and he deserves it, man. He's a really talented guy, can do a lot. I don't know, man. OG can do a lot of what Isaac does. Isaac a little bigger. But I don't know, man. OG does a lot of the similar stuff. And, you know, I think, especially for OG, he's coming up on an extension year as well. On his rookie contract, he's extension eligible this summer. You know, he could do a lot for himself. That's all I'm saying. And the Raptors really need a lot from him.
Yeah, no, I think I have really high expectations for him in the playoffs. And, you know, you talk about like 2 years ago too, like even as a rookie, like he just wasn't shook. Like we saw, mm-hmm. We've seen so many versions of Raptors playoff teams just kind of shrink in the moment. And, you know, for him to come in as a rookie and obviously draw that assignment in the second round, you know, going up against LeBron, like he wasn't fazed. So I'm expecting the same. And, you know, at the same time, we talk so much about the offense and you're right. You know, he's one of those guys, like he didn't play a lot of fourth quarters in games during the regular season. Like Nick, I think benched him for like a bit of a stretch there mm-hmm. in closing lineup. So I'd be interesting to see kind of what he can bring on the offensive end as well. You know, obviously not expecting him to be like a 20 point score or something, but even if he can give you a couple threes, you know, get to the free throw line and, you know, just consistently give you like 10, 12 points, I think that'll make a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he there is enough in his game right now to give you that kind of scoring. You know, as you mentioned, though, you know, even if a guy like Norm Close is ahead of him in certain situations, I think that's okay. Because Norm's been really good. There's no shame in being, you know, sat down for Norm, especially when Norm's in a groove too. So, yeah, I'm expecting a lot from Moji. I guess that's kind of related to keep bringing question number eight. Which player do you think will have a breakout in this year's playoffs out of the Raptors?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Norm and OG. You know, I do think some of what Norm has done during the regular season is going to translate. And, you know, for all the reasons we just talked about with OG, you know, I think he's going to play a huge role. And like you mentioned, I think he is finally going to get a lot more national attention, you know, especially with everybody watching during the playoffs. He's going to do a 20-minute interview with Malika Andrews and say 17 words.
No, I can't wait, man. I can't wait. Shout out Malika Andrews for going on like 25 different platforms to talk about and being asked about, you know, what's the food like in the bubble. It's really meticulous, man. I don't know. Disney's just got to provide like a, I don't know, like a PR contact to answer these questions. Because there's nothing against Malika at all. I think she's a great reporter. Shout out to the time she asked Giannis about free agency after the conference finals. That was a great moment. But like, you know, why is every NBA podcast I'm listening to start off with people asking Malika Andrews, like, what's the meal of the day today? Like, this is, come on, man. We don't need this.
This is what happens when there's only like, what, 10 writers in the bubble.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You know, if it was one of us there, it'd probably be the same thing. And this guy would be complaining about not having chicken feet and Taiwanese sausage for breakfast.
Yo, if they don't have that, you know, how can you really be a league that claims inclusivity, you know?
I wish there were more Asian players in the NBA just to hear one of them, like Wang Shiji, like breaking, like Wang Shiji breaking quarantine because he wanted some congee.
Oh, definitely, bro. Actually, you know what, though? Us Asians, we're very hardy people. Like, we're probably, like, you know, if Wang Shiji was in the bubble, he's probably bringing, like, a rice maker and making his own congee in his room.
It's like Jimmy Butler's dribbling the ball, you know, on the floor above him. Meanwhile, Wang is getting all the complaints because his room just smells like stinky tofu.
Oh, man. Yo,
yeah. Oh, that would have been amazing.
No, honestly, like, if we had more Asians in the NBA, like, we would have, like, players making dumplings together instead of going fishing and stuff. Like, I would love to see that, you know what I mean? Like, you know, because there's a whole process of making dumplings. Like, some people are specializing at folding, wrapping the dumplings. Some people are good at, I don't know, mixing together the ingredients. Some people are good at boiling the dumplings.
Oh, yeah, and they would run out of decks of cards because Asians love to gamble. So they would just play big two every night.
Yeah. Man, I mean, seriously, what did the NBA say to, like, Bicycle? Like, yo, let me get 10,000 packs of cards. Like,
they spent more money than they did on the quarantine meals, man.
I was going to say, man, Tomer Fertitta's really like, yo, come on, man. I'm already broke. I run restaurants and casinos. They're specifically not happening right now. And now you want me to pay for 10,000 packs of cards?
Tomer Fertitta charging NBA players delivery fees is... Honestly, it's worth an ESPN Outside the Line investigation.
Yeah, I need what's his name? Bob Lee to just be like, how much money do you have in your account right now?
No, but think about it, man. This is like if the NBA announced that Real Sports Bar and Grill would be providing delivery in Florida. Like, what's the difference?
Yeah, I'm honestly pretty sure Tillman Fertitta right now is actually being the delivery person himself so he can collect the tips.
No, the theory is Tillman Fertitta snitched on Bruno so he can suspend him without pay.
Wow. All right. I was going to make another joke about Westbrook there, but then I didn't. Okay. Yeah, that was a breakout candidate, I guess. Key question number nine, burning question number nine. Which team do you fear the most in the playoffs?
Yeah, so I think it's pretty clear, Milwaukee, obviously, in the Eastern Conference. And to be honest, I haven't even thought that far about, like, the Lakers or the Clippers. I could probably make a case that Milwaukee's the hardest matchup out of the three for the Raptors. I feel like their defense just kind of suffocates Toronto's half-court offense. And that's going to be a huge problem. And I mean, as much as they do such a good job scheming and like containing Giannis, like you can't get around the fact that not having Kawhi is going to be huge for them in this series.
Yeah, no, that's look, Kawhi, as much as other guys stepped up in that Bucks series, you know, Kyle averaged like 19, 5, and 5 and Norm had his, did his thing and Fred did his thing. Kawhi averaged 30 and guarded Giannis. That's a lot. that's just a lot, period. Like, I don't know what else to say other than that's a lot. And of course, yeah, Danny Green guarding on the perimeter too. I mean, I think that size in the perimeter is kind of needed because Milwaukee has a really, really big backcourt. But yeah, I mean, I think Milwaukee is the right answer here. To be honest, after listening to Stephen LeBron radio yesterday with you and Cash, when you guys were specifically discussing the Lakers and the Clippers, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, you guys really did talk to me in a lot of Laker propaganda. I didn't know Cash was that much on the Lakers. Obviously, they have LeBron, they have AD, but like the way you guys were talking about them, I thought they had Kobe and Shaq.
Listen, man. Yeah, I didn't know I was doing Lakers propaganda. No, the Lakers Clippers, I know this is a whole separate conversation, but Lakers Clippers is super interesting, man, because you can make the case for both, I feel like. Like, you would not be wrong. Like, that's why it's such like a fascinating series, right? But like, for Raptors Bucks, I mean, I think there's definitely a pathway for the Raptors to win that series. And, you know, I just go back to, in the same way that you give the Raptors the benefit of the doubt, because of that championship pedigree, because of the regular season that they've had, because we've seen Nick Nurse as a head coach in the playoffs. You also have to leave that kind of room for doubt for Milwaukee because of what happened in last year's playoffs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you combine those two things, maybe the gap between Milwaukee and Toronto isn't as huge. I mean, I think a lot of this, you know, series, if it does happen in the Eastern Conference Finals, I think coaching will be a huge thing. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I just feel like this series will go 7 games, especially because now you remove home court and you know, the Bucks don't have that advantage. I think that's huge for Toronto, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also huge that we don't got to go back to Milwaukee. We went to the same coffee shop like 5 times and the same restaurants a couple times, like, so this is a little bit small. And then key question number 10, I agree with you. It is the Bucks. It's just defensively, it's just they present so many problems for the Raptors against what the Raptors do well. That, yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not going to make any predictions about that series because I was wrong last year about it. And I'm very happy to be wrong. But
yeah, can you actually issue an official statement? So, you know, coming off the excitement of Kawhi's Game 7 shot, you like wrote an article the next day and didn't even bother to pick the Raptors. That was very off-brand of you, I felt like.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I was really buying into the Milwaukee hype last year. I was like, man, I can't believe they beat the Boston Celtics in 5 games. Wow, that dysfunctional club with backup center Al Horford.
With Kyrie Irving and Bob Cousy in the backcourt.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, man. I just really bought into the Milwaukee hype last year, and I thought maybe the same issues as this year. And, you know, I think at the time, the Raptors' bench was not showing up at all. Obviously, if you watch that Sixers series, that was just so tough. But I think what I didn't factor in is just like, when you go against different opponents, the matchups change completely, and that frees up a lot of guys to do a lot. And, of course, I think the Raptors also made adjustments to, like, change the way they were playing. So they weren't as specifically ISO heavy with Kawhi, and I think that helped a lot.
I specifically remember our former coworker Harrison Sanford getting so mad at me because I thought the series was over when the Bucks were up 2-0, because at the time the Bucks were putting up like historically great numbers in the playoffs, right? Like when you were looking at point differential, like it seemed like they were going to cruise.
It is easy to be historic when you play against Dwayne Casey's teams in the playoffs. We might just got to knock like, you know, zero. Like we got to knock like 10 points per game from LeBron's average against the Raptors. Just,
10 points, man. That's ridiculous.
It's the Casey tax, man. Come on. I mean, look, you know, okay, whatever. He was beating up on like, you know, Tony Snell. Like, bro, they were throwing Tony Snell and Thon Maker against Giannis, man. Come on.
But seriously, though, how did you feel after coming home to Toronto flying back from Milwaukee. How did you feel when they were down 2-0?
I mean, I didn't feel great. You know, it was actually funny because I actually, you know, because we went to Milwaukee twice, we had the same Uber driver somehow. Again, Milwaukee's a very small place. I've never had the same Uber driver in Toronto before. Just, you know, and I've lived here for a long time. But anyway, I got the same Uber driver twice in Milwaukee. And once it was on the way to the airport after the Raptors fell down 0-2 and Kawhi said, you know, we're going to Toronto to play game three. We talked to him then. He was just like, man, you know, this team is unbelievable. Like the Milwaukee, I think we're going to sweep Golden State. And I think we're going to be one of the greatest teams. And he was just talking. I was like, honestly, yeah, man, you guys look really good. Like, damn, you guys have Ersan Ilyasova. Like he's able to hit all these dark like shots. Like what's going on here? And then we got back to Milwaukee for game five, and we on our way to the stadium, I think we got the same Uber driver to game five, and the matchups were completely changed. The tone was completely changed. He was like, "Man, Serge Ibaka is so good, and Kawhi is so good. I don't know if Giannis is going to be that superstar." So I think a lot of people changed their tone during the playoffs during that course of that series. Is what I'm saying, but yeah, I mean, you know. I don't know. The Bucks are just weird, man. I want to slander the Bucks, but they're objectively like a really freaking good team. And if we're going to be realistic about it, Raptors are underdogs against them. But, you know, I wouldn't count them out either.
No, for sure not, man. Never underestimate the heart of a champion. Look out for those tweets on a Yahoo Sports Canada account coming soon.
Wow. 800 likes. Key question, burning question number 10. How are you going to celebrate the championship, the back-to-back championship, with social distancing still in place?
So I've got this all mapped out. The social
distancing. This is the research you did.
Yeah, this took up my 3:30 to 4:15 today. So the social distance parade will start at Pacific Mall. We are going to start with some socially distanced Peking duck to start off.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The buses will take off from there. Basically, every single player, you know, personnel, staff will have their own mini bus. Shout outs to Jim Sand getting his own bus. And you are going to follow along the parade route, which is going to take 6 hours again. And you would have
gone 6 hours because we're driving in from Warden and Steeles, but all right.
Well, I thought you were going to drop a Highway 7 reference. So you are wearing a Stanley Johnson jersey because you somehow bought it when he had two garbage time steals against the Lakers. Okay. In game seven of the finals, and he says, "Yo, he says, yo, throw it to me." So he signs your Stanley Johnson jersey the same way Jeremy Lin signed your Jeremy Lin jersey at the parade last year. Kind of that same thing happens.
Over under, yep. is Stanley Johnson scoring more than Jeremy Lin in the playoffs this upcoming year?
Unfortunately, I'm gonna go over. I think Stanley will somehow find his way to like the big three tournament on an off day and drop 85 mm-hmm. points. So this parade is heading down. I guess we're on Steeles right now. This is where I kind of lose my sense of roads and direction. Come on,
man. Yeah, I thought you were a great driver.
Yeah, so I hop on the 407. They hop on the 407 and you see me driving at 40 miles an hour. So they finally get downtown and the parade will end at SVP Sports on Queen Street. You know, a bit of a shout out to you. You know, Masai shouts you out. He references the 10 things that you wrote about game 7 of the NBA Finals. And you are named the new regional manager of SVP, and that's how you leave Yahoo Sports.
Oh, wow. I mean, what a step up for me. That's
this guy's the lead warehouse manager at SVP.
Holy wow. I can't wait to move clearance items. Can't wait to rock Puma with Adidas.
Oh man.
Every chance I get.
Yeah, so that's how I envision the parade playing out.
I got chills, man. I got chills. I want to hear Masai say, I said we will run it back in Toronto and we have run it back in Toronto. And I want that to be the lead of our show going forward.
Yeah, and, what are we gonna call the show next year, by the way?
Man, that's tough. You're putting me on the spot. I don't know.
I feel like we should just keep the name. We should just keep the name, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you could continuously run it back. Yeah. But I was actually just thinking, like, what is the parade going to look like? All jokes aside, because, A, there might not be a parade. I mean, the players are going to have to come back from the States, so that's a two-week quarantine.
Like, holy, imagine coming back just to quarantine.
So you saying. Have a parade. Players might just be like, no, I'm good, man. Come see us at the board. Come to Sarnia. Come to the border there. You know, we could just, like, you know, wave across the river or something.
I think they're gonna have a party at Disney World, at the pool.
Nah, you know they're leaving Disney World the first opportunity, man. You know they're sick and tired of seeing Disney and Mickey Mouse and all that.
It's gonna be DJ Nasty spinning the new Drake tracks, and somehow Dwight Howard, because the Lakers are still there. Dwight Howard's gonna be the first one there. At the pool once again. Yeah, I don't know. I'm guessing there's going to be no, like, any kind of parade. Like, I feel like the guys are just going to go home.
Yeah, which is going to be super weird. Like, when Liverpool won the Premier League, like, there was just a lot of live streams of them in an empty sort of mansion kind of situation, and people sitting on chairs with, like, a distant camera zoomed in. Like, I don't know. It wasn't the same as the parade, or even the parade in Liverpool last year for when they won Champions League. So,
yeah, you know, I'm hoping that Bruno Fernandes and Mason Greenwood will be able to celebrate at Old Trafford next season.
Mason Greenwood's name. Get out of here, man. Get out of here. You can tell me you can shoot with 2 feet.
Is that what he can do? That's a young phenom, man.
I'm so disgusted by this, man. I can't believe you switched sides so quickly. Can't wait for you to start next year as I don't know, an Aston Villa fan.
Yeah, what other teams do I have left? Because I know you rip Tottenham, being a Tottenham fan on Stephen LeBron Radio. Subscribe. Like, is there a team that you would accept bandwagoning right now in the EPL?
Honestly, if you wanted to hop on the Chelsea bandwagon, they're signing a lot of new young guys that are pretty exciting from the Bundesliga. They have the American player.
Is Didier Drogba not there anymore?
No, he's no longer there. I think he's something with the MLS, maybe. Or maybe I'm just remembering that he was on the Montreal Impact or something. But yeah, I don't know, man. But yeah, Chelsea is not a bad team to hop on right now, because they're always going to be a powerhouse, but they're down right now. You can get another the floor level, the ground level. You got some nice players. But, of course, you'd have to cheer for the one good American player there is right now, which is Christian Pulisic. And just, you don't want to be an American soccer fan, man. They're oddly annoying.
Yeah, everything about the EPL is toxic. We've talked about this.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Just stick to basketball fandom. Well, that does it for the podcast. Alex, anything you want to plug? Maybe you got a personal podcast or something?
No, I think we've talked about that enough. Your career is actually more important than my own career right now to me. Okay. So, everyone keep checking out, Will's work, and, we're all excited to have basketball to be back in 2 weeks, and hope everyone stays safe.
Yeah. Wow. What a great note. I thought you were going to plug the fact that we're going to do a rewatch of the 30-point comeback game. That's natural. Yeah. That's not even forced.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're going to rewatch. We're going to use that as an excuse to just do like a Kyle Lowry appreciation podcast episode on Stephen LeBron Radio coming next week. So, yeah, check it out. And, always a pleasure creating content with you, Will. And can't wait to talk to you later this week.
Likewise. So thanks for coming on, Alex. And listeners, we'll be back next week.
Run it back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.